Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Austin, Texas.
Austin man walks up to a stranger using a computer on the fourth floor of the Central Library, punches him in the head so hard he's knocked out of the chair, stomps on his head multiple times while he lies unconscious on the floor, then calmly walks back to his own computer, sits down. 10 cases of this, 3 felonies, all dismissed, 4 assaults, all dismissed, 0 jury trials, because he's got the last name Vasquez. And of course, the guy needs to be in a lunatic asylum, but they don't have those anymore.
APD Chief Lisa Davis happened to be at the library for a meeting about library security, so she helped detain Vasquez. He's now charged with felony aggravated assault. The victim has critical injuries.
Austin, Texas, like many Act Blue Soros strongholds, has a district attorney problem. Austin DA Jose Garza is releasing most first-time offenders back into a city where crime has skyrocketed.
I know we have a lot of DSA comrades, and I'm going to pass it off to our own elected official, Jose Garza.
Instituted a new radical policy, and that policy was to say that no one who does not pose a threat to our community should be sitting in jail simply because they can't afford to get out.
Hey, Jose Garza, why do you let all the criminals out? Every day people harass me on the bus. What's the deal, Jose Garza?
We have Jose Garza here in Austin, Texas, who is hands down the worst Soros DA, which says a lot. And he releases people after they shoot random crowds the next day. No bond. Only way you get in trouble is if the cops kill you. You make it to him, you're walking.
An attack on a Cap Metro bus in South Austin sent 2 people to the hospital this afternoon. This comes at a time when Cap Metro is expecting big crowds for South by Southwest.
Now, Cap Metro reports that its police responded to nearly 200 criminal offenses since June of 2025, which is also the same time that they launched their transit police. And for some context, Cap Metro says that they average nearly 2 million riders a month.
This is just the latest in a string of violent events on Cap Metro buses or bus stops. In 2022, a teenager was accused of stabbing a man to death at a Cap Metro bus stop in North Austin. In February of 2025, a teen was stabbed at a bus stop near LBJ High School in East Austin. Then in May of that year, one man fatally stabbed another man as they were riding a Cap Metro bus. That same month, Cap Metro created its transit police department. In January of this year, Austin police say a woman stabbed a man on a Cap Metro bus at 5th and Lavaca downtown. Later that month, police arrested a man for stabbing a victim 3 times on a Cap Metro bus. And in February, APD responded to a shoot-stab call at a downtown bus stop that sent one person to the hospital.
APD says Kandel admitted to stabbing Mr. Gupta because he resembled his uncle. He's now in the Travis County Jail facing a first-degree murder charge. Today, Cap Metro leadership acknowledged those witnesses who were on the bus.
Last night was an isolated incident, but it was horrific.
An isolated incident.
Bus operators are being assaulted. They're being spit on. We have a high uptick. And I'm calling upon all the leadership here for your help. I shouldn't have to file a grievance.
You know, a lot of these are broader social issues and healthcare issues and lots of economic issues that fall on our doorstep. But we may not be able to solve those problems, but we do have to grapple with the impacts of those broader social problems.
According to court documents, police believe 55-year-old Harold Newton Keene shot someone in the library's 6th floor bathroom and then escaped on a Cap Metro bus. Police think Keene shot someone else about 10 hours earlier.
Quita, that's right. And police say that earlier shooting happened on board another bus. This one was near the UT campus around 1:30 in the morning.
This guy runs up while somebody is sitting there reading a book, according to witnesses, beats him from behind, stomps his head in so bad the person's in a coma, fighting for their life. And the female police chief goes and basically tackles this guy. That's how bad crime is in Austin. You know where the CIA tunes in, right? You know where the Russians tune in? You know everybody tunes in, right? You know who Tucker Carlson tunes in, too, and Joe Rogan, and Elon Musk? You know where they tune in, right? They tune in right here.
InfoWars. Tomorrow.
tomorrow's news.
I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show here on Sunday Night Live, InfoWars. I'm your guest host, Royce White. I'm here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Such an honor to be back with you this weekend. If you're here in Minnesota, you got a winter blizzard here. In the great state of Minnesota, winter roaring back on us as it often does in March and April. I was on a campaign trail yesterday, Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning, all across the great state of Minnesota to different BPOUs. And I want to talk about political strategy a little bit this Sunday, just a little bit. Some things I came across out there on the campaign trail, some things that I heard that concerned me, especially as it pertains to all of the political headlines right now. It's almost as if the Republican Party itself, even at the grassroots level, is somewhat disconnected from the broader political conversation. So I just want to try and, you know, bring some clarity to some of those things this Sunday evening. Again, thank you for being here with us. And hey, I'm going to talk about the Jews today. As controversial as that may be, I know. And I hesitate to even do it. Why? Because I'm afraid to? Absolutely not. I hesitate because I think we've all lost the plot in some respects. I think some of these issues, become a scapegoat for us to, abnegate the responsibility of being patriotic citizens. That doesn't mean any of these issues independently aren't important and they don't deserve us to talk about them, address them maybe in an uncomfortable way. In fact, it does just that. It calls us to address things in what would sure to be an uncomfortable way. However, I'm concerned about the diagnosis of what the strategy is going forward. Like, what does it all really mean? And what are we doing next? I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And I'd be remiss if I didn't start off, right the elephant in the room. Hey, I'm black. Okay. My great-grandmother was Norwegian. My other great-grandmother was Mexican. Two black grandfathers. So by that standard, I'm mostly black, but got a touch of the other American fabric races in my heritage as well. Right? And the Latino community has been a big part of this country for a very long time. And obviously, it doesn't get any more white than Norway. So I think I have some authority to speak on a few things as it pertains to being black. And here's where my concern lies. I'm out there on the campaign trail, and identity politics is in full swing. There's no way around it. We've created that culture in this country. We've created a political culture of identity politics. That's what dominates. And it's not just race. It's men, it's women. It should be more based on age because the average age in the United States Senate for the Republicans is 64. For the Democrats, it's 66. I think maybe that should be the number one identity politic that we try and reel in. But Lord knows if you say that, then the boomers are going to hate you. And that's okay because they call me the boomer whisperer. So I just tell the boomers the way it really is. Anyway, identity politics dominates American culture. And there's a problem with the conservative movement right now. And I say this in love. I say this to try and be helpful, especially as the midterms approaches. I mean, we have 6 months until the most consequential election in the history of our 250-year-old nation. And we have completely lost the plot. Completely. I mean, we've lost the plot in a way where I don't necessarily see us winning. I hope we win. I know we can win. I believe we can win. I think we should win. We deserve to win, as they say in sports. We're the team that deserves to win. Why? Because we're right. Not far right, not extreme right. We're not fringe right. We're not alt right. We're just right. Just right. About a lot of things, but here's where we've gone gravely wrong. And for some reason, we think, I don't know, we can manipulate our way through it. We can trick people. We can deceive. We can walk around it or dance around it. I'm not quite sure what we think, but the human spirit and the human intuition longs for two things, freedom and the truth. The human spirit longs for two things, freedom and the truth. And so even when people are not intellectually organized enough to understand certain critical first principles and things like that, the truth still pulls at them. It's part of the weaponization of information is where people want the truth, but and they're searching for it, they're curious, and they run the it you know, makes them susceptible to believing propaganda. And that's kind of one of the things that's been a hallmark of the history of human civilization, really, but more so modern civilization. People want the truth. They're looking for it, for the most part. And when they don't find it in the absence of the truth, they'll take what they can get. Very, very biological instinct, like in that regard. And I say that to say this. We can't keep dancing around this. We can't keep dancing around this conversation the way we're doing. And there's some horrifying things that are coming across my timeline right now, horrifying in a number of ways. But this Israel-Jewish conversation is completely off the rails. Completely off the rails. And sure, there's that part of the conversation that says everything's on the Jews. That's ridiculous. I mean, we should know that's ridiculous. Everything isn't on anybody. And anybody who says that is looking for a scapegoat for their own responsibility in the matter or their own demographics responsibility in the matter, whether it's black, white, Latino, men, women, old, young, doesn't matter. If you say everything is somebody else, you're probably looking for an excuse. That's what we would say in sports. In a Jack Hughes sort of spirit, everything ain't somebody else's fault, especially when you're talking about saving a nation. You got to be even-handed with all the criticism. We get that part, okay? I think rational, fair-minded people understand it's not all on the Jews, but it seems to be that you just can't say certain things. And how long do we think we're going to be able to play that game with the American public? We're already demoralized. We're already misinformed. We've already been manipulated and psyoped up to the gills. What makes us think we're going to be able to save this great nation if we continue to dance around topics like this in the way that we are? And I'll give you the prime example, and I think I have some authority to speak on it because I am a black man. It would appear nobody in the conservative movement has a problem saying the word black anymore. Nobody has a problem pointing out what black people do wrong and the perils of the black community or black America, and rightfully so. Rightfully so. Amen. Praise be to God that we've gotten to a place where the political correctness has faded to the point where we can now say with a full throat, there's a big problem in black America. Huge problem. The black on black crime is out of control and it's tearing this nation at the seams. And it is. And it's used as a way to manufacture political consent to take our freedom, our liberty. I said in a PBS interview, the black identity, the identity of the black man specifically, has been weaponized to tear the fabric of this country apart, vis-a-vis Barack Obama. Now, we could argue whether or not he even qualifies as black, but that's for another day. You know what I'm saying. because the black identity is at the center of the identity politics modus operandi, it's the rally point for the identity politics in this country, and identity politics dominates our culture. The identity of the black man has been used to undermine the fabric of this country. Easy for me to say as a black man. I have no problem with it. I have no problem with saying, I look up and there's 40 young black men that go into a jewelry store and steal millions of dollars worth of jewelry. Black people should be ashamed when we see that. And America should be saddened and infuriated at the same time. The point I'm making, though, is that for the most part, in popular political conversation, Fox News, for example, or the many ancillary kind of offshoots of center-right American political commentary have no problem pointing out black people as a demographic anymore. And I think that's great. You'll hear them say things like, you know, slavery was 250 years ago, or Jim Crow was all the way back in the 60s, and when are you going to get over it? And, you know, that was a long time ago. And I kind of laugh to myself now when I'm called an anti-Semite and go, well, wasn't the Holocaust quite a bit ago? Or, I don't know, the Exodus from Egypt? The Jewish history seems to be quite a bit away from the current day situation as well. Anybody understand what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that in favor of bringing back the oppression Olympics for black people. I think we're on the right track. Slowly but surely, black people all across this country are going, you know what? We understand slavery happened. We understand Jim Crow and segregation and all of those things were dark marks on our nation's history, not dark enough to abandon our country wholesale, not dark enough to give away our American citizenship for global citizenship, not dark enough for us to hate this country, fundamentally, inherently hate our own country. We still have or need nationhood and national pride and honor. We still love our flag, which is why you see one there just a few inches from me. We understand the history, but we're not going to let the history cause us to self-destruct and implode our own country. I'm not bringing it up to bring back the oppression Olympics for the black race or the black identity. I bring it up to point out, however, if the public-facing campaign for our political platform as a party, as a movement, is going to be slavery was too long ago for us to keep talking about it. The same would be true of the Holocaust. The same would be true of the Jewish identity as well. But we can't say that. And people see it. I mean, that's the bigger issue. Like, again, I was on the campaign trail this weekend, and it just dawned on me as I'm sitting, because I don't do stump speeches. You see here, I don't have any notes. The real hitters, we don't need notes. We just talk. We just talk to you. We say it like it is. You don't need a script when you're telling the truth. You just say it like it is. Same thing I do on the campaign trail. I've never once written a speech on the campaign trail in 4 years. I'm standing there on stage at a local community center. Right there in Edina, Minnesota, a stone's throw from where I went to kindergarten. And now my mother worked at a spa in Edina on 50th and France. She's a cosmetologist, the eyebrows and makeup and, you know, facials and waxing and that kind of thing. And so me, being a St. Paul kid, I happened to go to kindergarten up the street from her work in Edina. Across the town kind of kid. I'm a real Twin Cities metropolitan area type of guy. Grew up all over the city for various reasons. One, single mother. And, you know, you spend a lot of time with your aunts and uncles and grandparents and so on and so forth because mom has to work. I count it as a blessing. I've seen a number of different types of communities and types of people. And I understand Minnesota and the Twin Cities intimately. So I'm sitting there at this Edina Community Center, going to speak to the Minneapolis Republicans. And there's some great Republicans down in Minneapolis, despite what you see on television or read in the news. And it just hit me. And I'll tell you the story, just so that you all understand the context, because we got time this Sunday evening. Great thing about me hosting in this show is that we got time. I think we got about 10 minutes until the next break, so I'll share a little bit of this context, this backstory with you. When I ran for Congress in CD5 back in 2022, I was trying to unseat Ilhan Omar, and I ran into a buzzsaw in the Minnesota Republican Party. There was a game being played inside Minnesota Republican politics that no new candidate could be aware of. You'd have to have come into contact with it or have some previous knowledge from some other line of work, maybe consulting or legal work or whatever the case may be. There are inside politics like you see down there in Texas, same way here in Minnesota. So I'm running for Congress, and we have our congressional district convention where the delegates of the Minnesota Republican Party or Congressional District 5 are going to endorse a congressional candidate, me being one of them. And a woman by the name of Cicely Davis was one of the other candidates. And she got up and gave a speech, and it was okay. I mean, it was surface deep, and I think even she looked back on it now and say, I was being used a little bit. And her and I have talked since then, and I think she's changed a lot in terms of understanding the lay of the land here when it comes to the politics, especially behind the scenes. But anyway, a man got up and endorsed her, who had been the previous chair of Congressional District 5. His name was Mark Miller. Mark Miller, very prominent in the Minnesota Republican Jewish community. We later find out that Mark Miller, and his endorsement carried a lot of weight because he had been the former chair in that congressional district. So people know him and they trust him and they like him. And he's considered an old sort of, you know, wiser voice, seasoned in the political process and the political happenings. And, you know, I would later find out that Mark had been going around saying that I was anti-Semitic, that I was an anti-Semite. Because I had any questions whatsoever about Israel or our relationship with Israel or the use of the Jewish identity. It's funny. I tell you that entire backstory to bring it to this past Saturday. I'm right there in CD5, and you know they were welcoming to me. They weren't rude or anything like that. And I actually got a standing ovation after I spoke from about six or seven people. And Mark Miller sitting in the front row there at the convention, and he's holding the time cards. I walk in and I say, how much time do I got? And they go, how much time do I have? They go, you got 5 minutes. I go, great. Who's got the time so I can see? And it's Mark Miller sitting in the front row. And I say, oh, Mark Miller, how you doing? He goes, oh, good to see you. I remember you. You remember me too, don't you? I go, I sure do. And I go right into the political strategy. See, because this is the bait and switch that's been played on us. And I want to bring our attention back to that this evening. There are the cultural issues, and there's right and wrong. But then you get this set of people who say, well, some issues transcend the right and wrong. Some issues transcend the morality and the ethics. Some issues transcend what's true and false. And then there's the political strategy. There are the political implications of a given issue and how we have to talk about it in order to be electable. Oh, and when you hear that word electable, you should fear it like the Black Plague. What? We have to be electable. Some issues make us unelectable. We just can't win on some issues. Like in Minnesota now, there's a referendum in the Republican Party about life, pro-life and pro-choice. We're going to waver because, you know, how are we ever going to win? How are we ever going to win an election if we're pro-life? I mean, it just doesn't work. It's too many women voting, I guess, is what they're really saying. We can't change the hearts and minds of young women. That's too tall of a task. We can't change the hearts and minds of American citizens or Minnesota residents or constituents. That would be politics. And we're not here to do politics. We're here to push our own agenda, an agenda that says, in some strange stretch of the imagination, foreign policy, foreign affair, now a foreign war, is so unpopular amongst the broad American public, somehow we are going to stake our flag for the entire 2026 midterms on another nation's problems and war. And they're going to tell you that makes us electable? They want me to take that into the Twin Cities? They want me to believe, they want you to believe that plumline Republican or moderate Democrat suburban white women are favorable for the on the Israel issue. That's our strategy. And I just kind of sit back and laugh. I don't know what you all think out there in the audience. Again, this has it doesn't really have anything to do with Jews other than the fact that a Jewish person like Mark Miller's lying straight to my face, and I should be able to say he's Jewish because he says he's Jewish. The same way he can say that I'm black because I say I'm black. Fair game. You're Jewish, I'm black. Both identities been used the same way across the charnel house of American history, where we're slowly but surely losing our freedom and our liberty. The Jewish identity is used to justify the infinite expansion of global governance. The black identity is used to justify the infinite expansion of the federal government here at home. But let's talk about the political strategy, because that's what they fall back on, or that's how they double speak you. It's about political strategy when the young 34-year-old ultra MAGA extremist says, you know what, I think women have gotten a little mouthy. Then it's about political strategy. Oh no, he's unelectable. You can't win saying stuff like that. But we're going to stake the flag of our entire political platform on a war, a world away that most Americans don't approve of. And whether or not we should be fighting that war, and I'm going to talk about that on the other side, because, I mean, there are serious implications to that question. Deep implications. I mean, deep considerations about when and where to fight a war and whether this is one of them. And again, I trust the president. I don't know if I trust the people around him. In fact, I know I don't trust the people around him. And I don't say that to sow, you know, chaos and dissent, because they got to figure out a way to steer this ship. And I'm sure for the most part, they're doing as good a job as they can, all things considered. There's even a piece of this that, you know, there's that truth too. It's not easy. It's just not easy. It's not easy to be president of the United States. It's not easy to save a country from its own self-destructive ways, its own cultural implosion. It's not easy. But don't tell the young 34-year-old ultra MAGA America First conspiracy theorist that I can't say women are mouthy or else that makes me unelectable. But we're going to win the 2026 midterms across this country, staking a flag on a war that nobody wants. That I shouldn't say nobody. I should say the polls. See, and then they do this. They say, oh, well, you know, how do you trust the polls? But then when a poll comes out about my unelectability, they hold it up in my face and say, well, look at the polls. It's like, are you people kidding me? Do you think, I mean, the amount of deception is a non-starter from the outset. The deception, the self-deception is a non-starter for a country that wants to be a country imbued with righteousness and sacred honor. I've said many times before, you look at those young black men that are stealing. Hey, when your government steals, everybody's stealing. When your government steals, everybody's stealing. You're watching The Alex Jones Show here on Sunday Night Live, InfoWars. I'm Royce White in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point
increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. And I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer, but they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now. You get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
This is the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show here on Sunday Night Live, InfoWars. I'm your guest host, Royce White. We're in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we appreciate you being here this Sunday evening. I'm just talking about the most controversial topic in American politics here. Nothing major, you know, nothing major. Just the thing you're not supposed to be able to talk about. You say the word Jewish, Jew, Israel, you're an anti-Semite. They never challenged me to a debate, though. I mean, and I'm noticing all of these Israel first types, they never really want to get in the ring and tangle with any of the people who they criticize, whether it be Tucker or Candace or Nick Fuentes or pick a person, Alex Jones, Bannon. And again, the other day I saw this strange occurrence where now they're trying to tie anybody who has any criticism whatsoever of our foreign policy, our orientation in foreign policy, back to Alexander Dugin. Whoa. Going back to the Russia thing, huh? What an interesting move. So it's just so dishonest. I don't know. I'm connected to Alex Jones and Bannon, and I don't know Tucker. I met him one time. I was on his show back in 2022. Was never on his show again. Thought I dropped a red pill on him. Pretty heavy red pill on him then. Never met Candace. Don't know her. Don't know Nick. Don't know any. I don't know many people, honestly. I'm kind of like a lone wolf. And I can say with 100% certainty that neither Alex nor Steve have ever even discussed Alexander Dugin with me. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, the gymnastics that we'll go through in this movement, in this party, the gymnastics, the mental gymnastics we'll go through to dance around this issue, to pummel around this issue or over this issue is absolutely, it's just absolutely astounding to me. As an honest person, talk about intellectual honesty, critical thought, first principles, rational, reasonable discussion. It's astounding. It's discouraging. It's actually discouraging because you would assume, and even, you know, I even saw a conversation that I just popped up in the last few days. You know, I'm not even going to. And let me say something about Alexander Dugin while we're on the topic. First of all, you should know your enemies. You respect your enemies. You don't define yourself by your enemies. If you define yourself by your enemies, eventually you become your own worst enemy. You know your enemies, you respect your enemies. Alexander Dugin is a hitter philosophically. Hitter. That's just what it is. That doesn't mean I'm a fan of him. Doesn't mean I like him. Doesn't mean I agree with everything. But I'm just talking about the level of intellectual rigor that he's brought to the philosophy that many believe are informing Vladimir Putin and a great deal of the Russian culture or the modern day Russian ethos. We should be talking to people like Alexander Dugin, and we should be studying the things that he wrote. We'll get a better understanding of the animating spirit in Russia, who, by the way, we said we would be done fighting by now a few times over since that war began, and that ended up not being true. While this whole skirmish is breaking out there in the Middle East, never forget there's still a war there in the Bloodlands that has not come to a conclusion, and it doesn't appear that we have the ability to bring it to a conclusion unless maybe you say, for whatever strange reason, we don't want it to come to a conclusion. And hey, maybe there's good merit to that. Maybe there's a good reason. I'm not sure. That's above my pay grade. I'm just reading the information as it comes across my desk. Alexander Dugin wrote something that is very insightful about the way politics and culture work, especially here in America, that the status quo, the centrists, the people in the middle, they pretend to be in the middle because it's advantageous politically, but really they're purveyors of the corrupt status quo. We know that to be true. We don't need Alexander Dugin to tell us. We know it to be true. Americans know that's true. We call it the Uniparty. It's the same thing Americans have been saying about Washington, D.C. and Republicans and Democrats for generations. It's what JFK was saying. You know, it's what Thomas Jefferson was saying to a degree. There's a difference between patriotism, patriotic civic duty, participation in the political process, and the dog and pony show, the theater that gets put on for the American public to manufacture consensus so that the agendas can get fast-tracked, rubber-stamped by an administrative state, by a deep state, by a security state. Centrists, people who say, bipartisan, I'm sort of apolitical. Well, that's cool in theory. Still got to call the balls and strikes. Let us hear your position. Explain it to us. And some people can do that with good utility. Some people are not doing that. Some people are saying the institutions themselves have to survive at all costs because the institutions, regardless of their morality or ethics, are what is important. And by definition, that is anti-human. If the institutions transcend the value, the importance, the meaning of humanity itself, By definition, the institutions have taken on an anti-human ethos, an anti-human spirit. And what Alexander Dugin said is that change usually comes from the periphery. Doesn't come from the universities, the Ivy Leagues, the fraternities or secret societies, the old money, the good old boys clubs from around the country of elites who are all but protecting their own interest, their own stake in the game, whether it be here in this country, whether it be worldwide. And we've opened up our country to worldwide influence, not just from Israel, certainly from Israel, but not just from Israel. We've opened up our country to influence all around the world. A loss of national pride, national honor, sovereignty, economic sovereignty, individual sovereignty. What he said is that change will not often come from the corrupt centrist middle, that they are usually the purveyors of the status quo. The change comes from the periphery. Here's the danger with this theory. The danger is just because change comes from the periphery doesn't mean it's a good change. Just because disruption comes from the periphery doesn't mean it's good disruption. And that's what makes this moment in American history so important, yet so dangerous. Because we've shrunk the periphery to a point of almost being non-existent. We despise the periphery. We despise the people who don't make us feel comfortable because they're not a part of the corrupt status quo. We despise the disruptors. And that's why they really despise President Trump, flaws and all. The flaws that you could point out with good merit are not the animating motivation behind the hatred of President Trump. The real motivation is he upturns the apple cart. He disrupts things for the most part. That's why they don't like him. So I'll give you an example. I'm playing on a basketball team. There's a player on the team who is better than me. Shoots the ball better than me, dribbles the ball better than me, jumps higher than me, runs faster than me, et cetera, right? I know it. He knows it. The coach knows it. All my other teammates know it. The other teams know it. The other coach knows it. Everybody knows it. This kid's better than me. But I think I'm the best. Delusionally, I think I'm the best. Delusionally, my parents think I'm the best. My parents come to the game, and for whatever reason, this kid who's the best player on the team is having an off day. Not shooting the ball well, not performing well. Turns the ball over at a pivotal moment. We lose the game, and on the car ride home, my parents are talking about how selfish this player is and how much the coach is favors him and how I should be the guy with the ball in my hands taking the last shot, so on and so forth. May be true that the kid had an off game. May even be true that he's a tad bit selfish. The point is, the reason they're saying it is not for those reasons. The reason they're saying it is because they're jealous. It's an inconvenience to their own agenda, to their own thought process, their own psychology. That player is an inconvenience for them. It's personal. And that's how politics has become in this country. We don't like anybody who tells it to us the way it is. It's uncomfortable. It's too uncomfortable. That's the real softness of America. You know, and even the transgender mania, the loss of meritocracy and giving everybody participation medals, all of that is a sort of three-card Monty, a sort of bait and switch on the road to the real punchline. The real punchline is we've made ourselves soft in all these other places. So when we come to that one shining moment where we have the decision to actually stand up and be responsible citizens, we pass the buck. We kick the can down the road at a very personal, a very individual personal level. We'll find any reason not to like President Trump. That's truth be told. We don't want things to change. That doesn't mean that people don't have rightful criticism about President Trump either. And as far as this war goes, I say, hey, maybe there was intelligence that Iran was about to attack us. I'd like to know who else was in the room other than Jared Kushner and Witkoff. Were the Iranians? And I just want to say this again. I'm a guy who just kind of goes by common sense. And I said this back when we bombed Iran's nuclear sites, which I really had no problem with anyway. Not a lot of skin off of our back. But just as a matter of logic, if I'm planning a surprise nuclear attack, I'm probably not going to develop those weapons at three addresses that everybody has. Just doesn't seem indicative of a surprise attack, of a diabolical plot. Surprise attack, diabolical plot, you usually do somewhere secret. That's kind of the whole point. Same thing here. Same thing again now. If I'm Iran and I really plan to spring a surprise attack on Israel, on my neighbors, or even, let's say, California, the last thing I'm going to do is walk into a meeting with my mortal enemy and tell them, we have enough enriched uranium for 11 bombs. And hey, maybe the Iranians are really that stupid. Maybe they are. I don't know. I wasn't there. It's just conspicuous. That's all I'm saying. It's just hard for me to believe. It's a level of things that just maybe I don't understand. I think I'm a pretty intelligent and reasonable, rational person, but maybe there are things I just don't get. Like the theater of war. Like why the Iranians would call ahead and tell our troops to clear out because they're going to launch a strike for show, I don't know, show of strength or approval from the radical Muslims in Iran or across the Arab world that they're going to fight back against the great Satan to maintain their power. Well, you know, the whole thing just glows. The whole thing glows to me. And hey, maybe that makes me unpopular. Maybe that makes me persona non grata. Maybe I'm not Christian enough because one plus two isn't equal in three here. That's fine. That's fine. We all get to decide the fate of this country now. We all have a role. We all have a stake in the immediate future of this nation. We can start telling the truth. We can have a renaissance or we can have a revolution. Leaning towards revolution. Did it ever dawn on anybody? Did it ever occur to anybody that maybe in this asymmetric war we're in with the Chinese Communist Party and maybe Russia or the Muslims, the Muslim Brotherhood or Iran, North Korea, did it ever occur to anybody? The whole point of their provocation is to get us to discredit ourselves? Did that ever occur to anybody? Is that on the short list of possibilities? Maybe they, like Hamas, understand the power of the public narrative. And certainly in this country, the Free Palestine movement, which is just about as dishonest as you could possibly imagine, surely they're winning the information war. Why? Because we don't teach kids anything anymore. The first priority is we should have overhauled every public school in this country. People will say, hey, doesn't happen overnight. Well, some things seem to happen overnight and others don't. And that's where I think we have our priorities a bit misplaced. If I do say so myself, I think some things tend to happen a lot quicker than others. And every time we look up, we're quick to bomb somebody. We're quick to military action. And sometimes you need to be quick. I'm not saying that the speed of mobilization in military or kinetic forces isn't necessary sometimes, because it is. And we do a damn good job at it. And I mean, anybody who looks at it and isn't impressed, you know, it's a marvel of modern society, of modern civilization, how quick we mobilize some of this devastating military force. There's an element that we should be proud of in that. You know, innovation and just even from an organizational standpoint, there's an element of pride we should take in how great our military is. And it is great. But did we ever consider that our enemies know they can't fight us head to head? So they're trying to win a war of public opinion over a much longer game. Like, for example, if Iran can hold out for the next 6 months until the midterms in the House and the Senate is lost to either far-left lunatics or Democrats in MAGA hats like John Cornyn, they won't need to win a kinetic war because America will give up priorities. It's not even about Israel. It's not about Israel. It's not about the Jews. It's about our priorities. For some people, it's about Israel and it's about the Jews, no doubt. I mean, there are people out there who just hate the Jews, same way they hate the blacks, same way there's a lot of Jasmine Unbelievable Crockett's that just hate white men. There's a lot of hatred going around, enough to go around a few times over, several times over, maybe 1,000 times over how bad the culture has gotten. There's enough hate to go around. We understand people out there actually have hatred in their hearts. We get that. But the adults in the room have to continue to focus on priorities. And if anybody out there says, for some strange reason, I don't support the president because I'm asking this question, you just proved the point. And all the people out there who are, you know, the Jew hatred, excuse me, am I sitting here, you know, claiming racism? If everything becomes anti-Semitism the same way everything had become racism, what makes us any different than the left? Riddle me that. Mark Levin, Jesse Waters, Laura Ingraham. Riddle me that. If everything becomes anti-Semitism the way everything had become racism and still a large part is, what makes us any different than the left? No, we're not the woke right. You people are the woke right. You people are using the Jewish identity the same way that the left uses the gay, female, and black identity. You're not fooling me. And I can speak on it with some authority because I'm black. And I dare any one of you, lighten your loafers, effeminate conservative black men that they card up there on Fox News or anywhere else across mainstream conservative media to sit down and have a debate about it. Love to get a Brandon Tatum. Love to get a Brandon Tatum in a live debate. Would love to. Anytime, sir. And I don't mean to go for him because he's another black Republican or conservative. I mean, I just see him out there kind of carrying the Israel flag in a way that's sort of embarrassing. But I'll take a Mark Levin. Let's talk the Constitution. Let's talk in what strange formulation of the Constitution is a war a world away more important than the security of our own elections? You can do all the constitutional esoteric jargon you want to, all the academic study that you want to, but the bottom line is some things are just common sense. And sure, people will say we can do both things at the same time, but can we? It would appear that we can. Sorry to say, it would appear we can't do both things at the same time because our elections still aren't secure. Now, I wake up tomorrow and our elections are secure. Okay, now we'll move on to the next thing. That's fine. But until our elections are secure, it is the single most important thing on the list. Numero uno, number one and 1A. Secure elections. And doesn't it just amaze people? The same Democrats in MAGA hats, the same rhinos who have always opposed President Trump, don't like the MAGA movement or the MAGA base, don't believe in an idea like America First, are the same ones who are openly holding up the SAVE Act. I mean, don't piss on my head and tell me it's champagne. Don't piss on my head and tell me it's champagne. They hate us. They hate the MAGA movement. They hate the America First idea. They hate President Trump. And I think he's smart enough to know it. And I give him some grace because I do think that he's playing a game of chess that is far more complicated than any of us could possibly imagine. But as the general public, as American citizens, we, like him, can only deal with the information we've been dealt. And in the information we've been dealt, we are duty-bound to ask basic common sense questions. If there's information that supersedes our common understanding, then let that be the case. But let the record reflect that common sense American citizens asked common sense questions in this nation's darkest hour. What should our priorities be? We are your friends, President Trump. We are your friends. The MAGA base, the deplorables, we are your friends. And even there, they show me the polls that say 90% of the MAGA base are in favor of this war because we are in a holy war with the... And you know what? Let me say this before we go to break, and we're going to be back on the other side for an entire another hour. I'm just going to bring it to you real raw. My name is Royce Alexander White. My initial spell, I just bring it to you raw. Real. Not saying I'm right, but I am raw and real. We are in a holy war. There's no doubt about it. The Islamification in our own country tells us that. Anybody on this side of the thing who are saying, it's all the Jews, Muslims aren't the problem, slow your roll. I mean, come on, what kind of game is that? What is even that? You yell death to America for whatever reason you yell it, I got to take it on face value. You mean it. They're saying kill the infidels, kill the Christians, kill the Jews, kill the Americans. They're praying about it openly in the public square, in their mosques. We're watching it. We're hearing the translations. So don't act like we're not in a holy war. We are. But I'm going to remind you of the Crusades when we come back from the other side of the break. Now, the fog of war gets a little complicated, and sometimes the people who are on the same side of the line as you don't have the same fortitude or the same end goal in mind. We are in a holy war. The question is timing. The question is priority. The question is, what is the end goal? Those are the questions that sane American citizens are right to ask. Does it make us anti-Semitic? Does it make us racist? Doesn't make us anti-Christian. Doesn't make us anti-Jewish. Makes us anti-stupidity. Anti-failure. Listen to The Alex Jones Show here on Sunday Night Live. I'm your guest host, Royce White, in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're dealing with the most controversial topic in American politics, and we'll be right back in a moment. Stay tuned.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide, 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.